You're listening to the Fixing the Fix podcast, the show that brings you personal stories about mental health and addiction, along with insight from experts in the field. I am your host, Heather Rhodes. Let's get started on today's episode.
Hey, Fixing the Fix listeners, it's Heather back, and I'm excited about our show today. I have a special guest that I've actually wanted to come on the show. She probably doesn't realize this, but you know, since it started back in April, and I have Jana Haney with me. And today we're going to talk about co-parenting, step-families, and I'm wondering if there's anybody out there that's struggling with co-parenting and how this is working for you, because I know firsthand I'm a child of divorce. I am, you know, I've been through divorce myself and co-parented, and it can be really challenging, and on everybody that's involved, not just me, but the kids, the parents. And so anyway, Jana's going to help us navigate that today. Thanks for coming on the show, Jana. So glad to have you.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Heather, for inviting me.
You're welcome. I'm going to do a brief introduction. Jana is, her journey began with her first, when her first marriage ended about 20 years ago, and she first wrestled with the issues of single parenthood, the step family life, and she learned a lot through all that. Jana helps families build new skills and resilience and deal with conflict, attachment, and trauma in challenging situations with a unique counseling and coaching approach. Jana and her husband, Mike, who I actually had on the show last week, have been married for 20 plus years and living the step family life, and they have four grown children. So Jana is has an MS, LPC, and EMDR certified. And so Jana, you have a lot of experience in this, and I'm just wondering, you know, what is helpful for you to share about how this affects mental health when it comes to step-parenting and co-parenting and blended families?
Well, what I'm going to say is that families are the foundation of our society, of our life, of our world, right? They are the one thing that provides most people purpose. And families also give us information about ourselves, right? Parents act as a thermostat and a mirror for their children. And so how parents are doing, how parents are navigating the world, how parents are willing to learn and grow and adult themselves if they had difficulties in their own childhood, right? They're having to kind of grow themselves up. So all of this is incredibly important to our world and how we function. And within families is where we learn about emotions. We learn about self-worth. We learn about how we respond to the world, how we react relationally. And so families are our purpose, and families are the place where we learn. And so the mental health of parents and children becomes crucial to the survival of our world that we live in.
Yes, it does. And with, you know, our divorce rate being 50-60% now, especially when there's a second or third marriage and blended families, it really can create a lot of stress and anxiety on, you know, the couples that are going through this. And then also especially the kids. And so I like to focus on, you know, talking about how this affects the kids too. Tell me more about repartnering too quickly after a divorce and the attachment issues around that.
Well, look, I think you and I had this conversation at some other point, Heather, about how at the end of marriages, or as we are in relationships, or even, you know, if we're not married, if we're living with somebody or in a relationship with somebody, where things, we begin to have problems, we have breakdowns of communication, we have detachment, we have a lack of loving touch and care, as relationships begin to struggle and then to crumble oftentimes, it's very normal for partners, for people to come out of a relationship and feel needy, you know, want to be in a positive relationship, want to feel good about their relationship skills, believe that they deserve the right to be in a loving and caring relationship, that it's honoring and sharing and powerful. And so it's very normal that adults perhaps do a lot of their grieving about their relationship while they are still married or at the end of it, which is oftentimes too why affairs happen, right?
Sure.
And so we want to honor and respect the fact that human beings have a need for love and connection. And so it's not going to be unusual then that by the time somebody gets married, that the last few years of their marriage or whatever have been difficult, or the last few years of being with somebody. And so they're going to naturally reconnect. They're going to naturally go out and want to be involved in relationship with other people. The problem is that while they may be ready, while they may have done a lot of their own work, while they may have even been in counseling or therapy and done therapeutic work, the challenge is that children are not.
Right.
The challenge is that even in homes where there are fights and problems and issues, children just really generally have a lot of grief around their parents' divorce, even if it was needed or necessary, even if the child knows that it's true, because divorce completely changes everything for children in terms of their support system. And I just want to say here that this doesn't mean it's horrible, awful, terrible, because there are lots of different changes and challenges that all families have. So I have a complaint about the fact that divorced families are the ones that they do so much research on.
Yeah.
Around, and I believe that most people do this to prevent divorce, right? We feel that it's preventable.
Yes.
But the reality is there are all sorts of families with all sorts of problems. We have families that have chronically ill parents or family members. We have families that have children with special needs. We have families that are are in the armed forces or armed services, and they're traveling all around the world. Those families have challenges.
Yeah.
So parents lose a job, parents lose their home, parents, we go through a pandemic, right? So there are lots of different ways in which challenges happen for families. So divorce is not the only one.
That's right. I agree with that. And, you know, I just want to say intact families also, you know, we get a bad rap for, you know, being divorced and, you know, having a new family, but intact families can have just as many issues that are unhealthy and toxic for everyone. And
exactly.
Staying in that is not healthy.
Exactly. And while we, you know, and so we want to honor the research that divorce, that tells us about divorce, but we just want to remember that all families, divorced, biological, step families, have their good things and their not so good things, right? And they all have their own challenges. And so it's unfair to place a specific burden on children in divorced families. On the other hand, we do want to acknowledge that there are just different challenges with each of these different kind of family situations. So I just wanted to put that out there as we talk about that, because I know for myself, I divorced when my daughters were 2 and 5. And I remember taking my oldest to kindergarten that year and feeling like I had a big D on my chest.
Yeah.
And I was one down.
Yeah.
I was one down. I had less to offer. I had already, you know, I couldn't even act like I was a really great parent because I was already divorced. So what did that say
right.
about me? That's probably
I've been that parent too.
Topic.
Yeah, I've been that parent too. I have one that was 2 when I divorced, and you know it was difficult, but we made it through it. And she's 23 now, and she's thriving. And you know, I think what we need to remember is all of this is possible, and we can get through these times. But you know, it takes us all working together through the changes and navigating this.
Well, what you're really talking about is awareness, right? We just need to be aware that, so, you know, your question to me was, what do we, you know, how do we do this whole marriage, divorce, repartnering? And what I'm saying is that it's natural for people to want to move into another relationship more quickly, even mm-hmm. though it may not seem like a long time. And we want to honor that and understand that. But the problem is your children are usually not ready.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And I'm going to tell you, I've had lots of stepfamily couples I work with say, we did it too fast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We should have waited longer. And the truth is, I rarely have couples who've waited 2, 3, 4 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And those couples never say, gosh, we should have done it faster. So yeah. I do know that my husband and I, we were both, I mean, I was a single parent for about 3 years, and we waited a long time mm-hmm. before we brought our children into the relationship, a year mm-hmm. or more, mm-hmm. and then another year or more before we, you know, before we engaged and got married. So we mm-hmm. we took our time, and mm-hmm. children just need time. They need time to yeah. adjust to all the changes that happen within divorce.
Right.
And so what we want parents to do then is to take care of themselves, and mm-hmm. you want to date, go date, but, you know, date when you don't have your kids. And if you mm-hmm. have your kids all the time, then your goal then is to find healthy ways. Everybody needs alone time.
Sure.
We can't parent 24/7. So, you know, find that local gymnastics place that offers a Friday night mm-hmm. and for kids. If you're someone that's religious, you know, lots of churches, synagogues, whatever, provide opportunities for parents for daycare, mm-hmm. but, or co-op with another single parent, right? So mm-hmm. maybe you have a deal with another single parent, and on this weekend, on these Friday nights or Saturdays, you know, you've got their kids and they get to have a Friday night and a Saturday to themselves, and then you switch. There's lots of ways for parents.
Yeah, there's ways to get through this. And
there are ways to get through support. It.
Nobody
can parent 24/7. The other thing I'm going to say about being a parent that feels one down is that perfect parents don't teach kids anything anyway.
I love that. Right? I love that.
So in fact, most of the kids I know whose parents try to be perfect are just frustrated and annoyed at their parents, right? Because who can meet that standard? You know, children are, you know, given information all the time, and part of their job is to learn and to learn how to do things in a way that their parents like, or their teachers like, or their coach likes. And so, you know, children know they're not perfect because they're always having to learn and do things.
Yeah.
Parents need to realize they're not perfect, and we're all in this together.
Right.
So I can maintain my parental status mm-hmm. and my authority in the home, but I can still be aware mm-hmm. that it's still helpful to my kids for me to talk about mistakes I make. Yeah. Not like all the massive ones, but like mm-hmm. the ones like today I was at work and my boss yelled at me and it really made me feel bad. And then I sat in my office and I walked around the room and I did some breathing and I called a friend and then I felt a lot better. Like mm-hmm. that is a much more effective way to talk about your challenges and your problems with your children than to launch into all the horrible things at work mm-hmm. or, you know, to try to act like nothing bothers you.
Yeah. And I think that's being so vulnerable and real too with your kids, and they need to see that side of us.
Well, they need to have authentic role models.
Yeah.
They're modeling for them. This is how you move into the world. This is how you relate to other people into the world. And you're going to have problems in the world, right? The world, life is, people are messy and complicated.
Yeah.
Families are messy and complicated. Yeah. And so it's natural that human beings are going to, we're going to be in relationship. We're going to have problems. And then we address them. Mm-hmm. We're going to be at work. We're going to have things come up, and we have to figure out how to address them. And this is life. This is how mm-hmm. life works and what life is made of. So, sure. So if we've grown up in a home where either we had parents that were always doing things for us mm-hmm. and we never got the opportunity or were never given the opportunity to do it on our own, that will mean that as we move into the world and college and up into our 20s, we're probably going to struggle more.
Yes.
And have more anxiety and avoidance about what's going on. Or we can grow up in a family where we don't get much support at all. Mm-hmm. These are the two ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Here. we don't get much support at all. And then we struggle because we are so ultra independent. Mm-hmm. And we don't ask for help.
Yeah.
That we don't know how to stop. We don't know how to perhaps change the way we do things because we never had that experience relationally of in a healthy way. So for a lot of us, we don't have the healthy functioning in childhood, and then we're out in the real world and we're kind of reaching in the dark. Well, I think it's this way. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I do this. And so anyway, so it just creates challenges for parents.
Yeah. And I think that's helps a lot with teaching kids how to problem solve, because I think kids struggle with that today when they don't get these opportunities to learn. So let's talk a little bit about high conflict cycle. And I know this is something that you're really good at helping couples work through, parents work through. But I want to take a moment and ask the listeners, you know, what grade, we're always talking about the kids' grades, and, you know, we're about to start back to school, and we're sometimes ultra, you know, put an emphasis on, you know, making all A's or A's and B's. But I want to know, if you could ask yourself, listeners, what grade would your kids give you as a parent, as a co-parent? And, you know, an A, you know, we're not always perfect, right? Jaina was just talking about that. A B, I mean, we have our bad days, right? We're going to make mistakes. We're human. But, you know, when we start moving into the C and the D's, there's something that we need to take a harder look at, because then I believe, you know, we're getting into an area where our behavior is affecting everybody else around us, and especially our kids. So if you're feeling like a C, D, or F, your kids have got to be feeling that way too, if that's the grade that they're giving you. So tell us more about high conflict divorce and how we can be in that A, B range.
Look, I have a very firm belief that no one should be judged by their worst days. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. And I think all parents have difficult times and moments, and that is also a part of life. Mm-hmm. And in the addiction world, we talk about halt, mm-hmm. hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, and these are all moments mm-hmm. when we're not going to be our best selves, right?
Right.
And I like to add an S to that for sick. So hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or sick. So we do want parents to have an awareness that when they are any of these things, mm-hmm. It is going to be more difficult for them to manage and regulate. But
for sure.
The question you asked me was about the high conflict work. And so, you know, I really enjoy doing the high conflict work and learning about it. And I think for me, it was because it really connected a lot of dots for me. The more that I understood about how high conflict works. And of course, most of my work, some of my training has been done with Bill Eddy with the High Conflict Institute. And Bill has its own website. You can go to it. And he does have some online programs for parents there that are quite good. Mm-hmm. And as a licensed provider for New Ways for Families, I love the work that he's done, and I teach it a lot because it is effective. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's effective is because it's simple and it's easy to understand, but it also goes to the heart of these issues. Mm-hmm. And remember, a lot of what we end up teaching families are like basic things anyway, right? Like you talked about the ability to problem solve. Well, a lot of times families forget how to do these basic things, so we bring them back to the basics. But how Bill Eddy talks about high conflict is really helpful, because what happens is we, as parents and co-parents, we often are in a high conflict cycle. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what I want to do just very briefly is talk about this high conflict cycle. And if you think about it like a circle, as a cycle, we'll start at the top.
Okay.
And the top is that a person has what we call a mistaken assessment of danger. So basically, you can send a very normal email to your co-parent saying, "Hey, I'm Jimmy needs to go to soccer on Tuesday night, and I'm going to take him. Could you pick him up?" Like something completely benign. Mm-hmm. If your co-parent is in a bad place, or they've had something happen, or they're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, or mm-hmm. maybe they have other mental health issues. They may send back an email and, what do you mean? Why are you doing this? We agreed. You're a horrible parent. Like, it can be anything. So that is a mistaken assessment of danger on their part. So something about your email triggered them, and they felt, and remember, this is important, unsafe, literally. Now, once again, you didn't have anything to do with that. You just sent the email. But whatever's going on with them, that's how they responded. So the acronym for that is MAD. So mistaken assessment of danger, MAD. So there it is. The second piece of this is called BAD, and that is behavior that's aggressively defensive. And that's that behavior that you got in that email telling you why you're doing this and what's the matter with you and you're a horrible parent and the tirade. That's not unusual for people to sometimes get with co-parents, especially co-parents that have problems.
Right.
And even co-parents that don't, if they're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or sick. So I'm just going to keep saying that. Okay.
Okay.
So you've got the MAD and then you've got the BAD. Well, then here you are. And you have these two big things that have happened with your co-parent. And the problem here is that we often, as co-parents, give something to this person called negative feedback. So when we get that email telling us how horrible we are, then what we do is we turn around and we do a number of things that are normal and human but not helpful. We say things like, what's the matter with you? We say, we defend ourselves. We say, you need to, you know, go outside and take a break, or you need to go back to your therapist. We give advice. Or if we're talking on the phone to somebody, whatever, we might do some nonverbal. We might roll our eyes. We might sigh. We might look bored. I mean, it's just, but all of these are considered negative feedback, especially to a person that already feels unsafe. It's going to be negative feedback. So then we give that negative feedback, even if it's practical. And what happens is it takes us right back to this mistaken assessment of danger, and it kicks off the cycle again. So we give the negative feedback, and then it goes back here. And then this is why when you're dealing with your co-parent, you're just going around and around. And around, and you're hooked into a high conflict cycle.
That kind of seems like insanity to me.
Well, of course it is. The thing is that human beings, you know, if we think we're right, or if we get offended, or if we feel targeted, we will naturally defend. We will naturally, for some people it's defending, you know, I am a good parent, you're not. For some people it's being offensive, it's sticking up for themselves in a way, like, I'm doing fine, you're the one that's creating problems. Or we just collapse, like, we're so overwhelmed or flooded by all the words from our co-parent. And this is a very normal response. And I see this, quite frankly, more so in men than in women, that they will get overwhelmed and flooded by all the ugly words and all the conflict. And they will just shut down. It will just shut down.
Yeah.
It's exhausting and it's difficult. And so what Bill A. talks about is getting yourself unhooked. So the way that you unhook from this cycle, in part, one of the things is, do not give negative feedback. So rather than giving advice or defending yourself or doing nonverbals or telling them they're high conflict or even avoiding, which is a whole other issue, the goal here is to respond with something called EAR, empathy, attention, and respect. Now, you're not going to feel like doing it. But the goal is to say, okay, this doesn't work. This part of this circle is the only thing I have control over. So when I get these emails from this co-parent, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use EAR. I'm going to say, gosh, it sounds like you're having a really hard time or a hard moment. And I can see that you're upset.
I like that validation too.
Well, and once again, you're not going to feel like it. But your goal is to get unhooked. So your goal is to not take in all the words and the upset of the other parent. So Bill Eddy also talks about emotions are contagious. And this is also what happens with parents and children, right? Children pick up on the emotions of parents, and it's really hard for kids. And so, but we want to get you unhooked. So you use EAR. And you can find an art. You can find articles about ear on Bill Eddy's website. I could even send you some, Heather, if you'd like for me to do that. But the goal is to begin to see that what you're doing does not work. And with people that are high conflict or in high conflict moments, their thinking brain is shut down anyway. But you can bring their thinking brain back online by saying, well, I can see that you're upset. You know, what is your proposal here? That's another way of just, but not going to the place where you defend or you get offensive, but where you stay the course. So this is a practice and a skill. I say it's like yoga. Yeah. It's like going to the gym. First you start with a 1 pound weight, then a 2 pound weight, then a 5 pound weight, right?
Yeah.
At the 10 pound weight, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm glad that's in the past. But those early days of going to the gym, you are sore, you are tired, you feel like you can't walk, and you wonder why the heck you're doing it. So all of those feelings are going to be normal as you think about this high conflict cycle and you think about ear. Now, do you want me to talk about some of the traits that high conflict people have?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Yeah. I like those, hearing about those, because I believe we can all identify.
Absolutely. Well, and once I kind of get going, it's just a little easier. So Miletti also talks very simply about traits that high conflict people have. So the first thing I'm going to say again is we can all be high conflict sometimes. We all have these moments.
It's normal.
That is normal. When I'm in an airport and my flight is 3 hours late, I am a high conflict person. Okay. but the deal is that there are people in the world that operate from that, having that mistaken assessment of danger from that. They have a whole different operating system in their brain and they operate primarily as high conflict. And high conflict people have six qualities. The first four are all or nothing thinking. People are all good or all bad. Situations are all good or all bad. And this is why if you were married to somebody that was somewhat high conflict, or maybe they were a lot or little, but whatever, you will be good when you're married to them, and you will be bad when you're divorced from them. This person that used to be able to do X, Y, and Z doesn't do anything anymore. Now, there's a natural part of that happens when we get divorced. This is a person we chose to have children with. Now we don't feel like they're the best person anymore. So it's a very natural thing to move away from that. But there's a difference between moving away from that feeling of, oh, this person is the best person in the world, and this person is horrible, awful, and terrible, and everything is their fault. So that's how a high conflict person sees it. They feel threatened by it. So all or nothing thinking, unmanaged emotions. So that's the big responses to things. That's the punch in
drama.
The mouth. That's all the drama, all the big ups and the big downs, and hooking you right into all that. Extreme behaviors. So those are your people that send 30 texts in an hour, 20 emails in a day, repeatedly call till they can get you. And then extreme behaviors are also with co-parents really understandable because of the dynamic of co-parenting, which is we're married and one of us is probably permissive and the other one is probably more structured, just as a general rule for how people work in relationship. Right. And so when we get divorced, parent A is probably a little more permissive. And they don't have as many rules at their house. And so parent B, who tends to be more structured anyway, is like, oh, this is so great. I can finally do this the way I want. So each parent is doing the way they want.
Yeah.
The more this person is permissive, the more this parent feels they need to be more structured. The more this parent feels they need to be more structured.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Before you know it, you've got what we call the great divide. It's not just bluebell ice cream.
Right. Yeah.
It's this piece of I got to do it this way because my ex is doing it that way. And both people just get more and more entrenched in their views about how things should be, how things should be done. And the last one is that high conflict people do not take ownership or responsibility for their own mistakes. They never, ever, ever, ever do that. They blame others for everything.
That's sounding a little narcissism-ish to me.
What'd you say?
That's sounding a little narcissism-like to me.
Well, listen, you know, I mean, the words narcissism, borderline personality disorder, bipolar personality disorder, you know, those are all terms that are really tossed around a lot. Mm-hmm. And even the high conflict person term is kind of a newer term. Mm-hmm. I really try not to use those terms mm-hmm. because I don't find that it helps.
Okay.
And, you know, we don't ever know what's going on with somebody as I just discussed previously. Uh-huh. And so all we know is this is what we are seeing. Uh-huh. And this is not helpful to this process. So
right.
I know in family court stuff, uh-huh. it's not unusual for co-parents to be accusing each other of being a narcissist or borderline. And it's truly ineffective in court and in legal issues, because then it just looks like it's the
name calling.
Yeah. It's the pot calling the kettle back, and both black and both parents look bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you do that, if you're regularly saying to your ex, you're this or you're that, or you regularly are telling therapists who work with your children that your ex is this or that, it, mm-hmm. it actually is not effective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about now, like, strategies for co-parenting relationships. What are some strategies that you can share with the listeners when it comes to, you know, dealing with the ex-spouse and high conflict situations and, you know, navigating through that? And, you know, just, I believe we talked about before, like creating a plan and those kinds of things, getting some skills and tools in our toolbox.
Right. Well, so this is you're spot on. You know, the deal is, though, is that, you know, when I went through my divorce and then remarried a few years later, Bill Eddy was not around. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. there was not a lot out there. Of course, there are all those books about co-parenting. God bless him. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. if you've read one, you've read 100. And while I always appreciate people that say, can't these two parents just get along? Mm-hmm. My experience has been, and I do a lot of work with these parents, that there's often one parent that really mm-hmm. wants to get along, mm-hmm. that really wants to co-parent, that is flexible, does try to do mm-hmm. things, that does try to put the parents first, and that oftentimes there is one person that just wants to fight. Or just wants to win, or just wants to be in control. Now, it's not that way all the time, but the whole idea of a high conflict family or high conflict couple thinking that they're both that way in divorce is inaccurate. And we've done a disservice to co-parents by acting like that is the norm. So all parents have some good things and some not so good things. And so all parents have their own issues and challenges to the table. Mm-hmm. That's different than one parent who is working hard to try to be flexible, who's willing to make changes, who tries mm-hmm. to create opportunities and different ways of doing things, and another parent who just wants to win, who mm-hmm. wants to be in control, and who wants to blame you for everything. So I do want to differentiate there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But with that being said, the first part is to stop being surprised.
So like...
I didn't have Bill Eddy, and what I realized, so I'll explain that in just real quickly.
Okay.
I didn't have a Bill Eddy. I didn't have a lot of help, and my husband and I remarried, and what happened is we have expectations of how people should act. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, people as a natural course of living are not going to act the way you want them to, mm-hmm. whether it's a co-parent or at work, or even in family life, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they did not want to act. They, you know, so we had these expectations of how things should go, mm-hmm. what people should do, what they should say, how they should respond. And we kept getting surprised. And mm-hmm. at some point after like a couple of years, we were just like, what do we do here? Like, mm-hmm. this is making us crazy. And what I began to realize was the reason I was surprised was because even though I knew in my head that this probably wasn't going to work, mm-hmm. I just kept still expecting
mm-hmm. yeah.
it would be different. So there was an underlying expectation mm-hmm. where I was not being truthful with myself. Now, I think we do that mm-hmm. because it makes us sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
If you're telling me that this is how it's going to be with my ex for as long as we share these children, mm-hmm. I don't think I can stand it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we also, I think we get divorced and we feel so bad and guilty and awful and horrible mm-hmm. about the divorce itself. We have a lot of blame, shame, and regret. Mm-hmm. And so the one kind of shining light for most people is, well, at least I can co-parent. I can learn how to do this. I can work with my ex. Mm-hmm. And then I think what happens is if we find ourselves in a situation where that is not happening, mm-hmm. I think it really can send somebody, you know, way down deep. And what I say to parents is, look, just pause it. Just mm-hmm. say, you know, for right now, it's not working that great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, and just have some acceptance mm-hmm. around acceptance the right now.
More, yes.
Like, you don't have to go 10 years ahead, just for mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. And for right now, I need to stop expecting that anybody's going to do what I want them to do. Mm-hmm. And I need to start looking at the patterns of behavior of what's happened so far. And I need to mm-hmm. take note, and I need to put my expectations there. So if every year, there are a number of stress times for single parents and step
yes.
divorced mm-hmm. families, and mm-hmm. they usually operate as school begins to start back. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of things that happen. Children have new teachers, and there's open houses, and mm-hmm. there's new friends, and there's new parents around. And so the start of school year is always stressful. You get into November, December, holidays are always stressful because we're splitting up time. We're trying to cram so much into the time we have. Mm-hmm. Then you get into the spring, and you've got April and May, and people are making summer designations, mm-hmm. and they're having to respond, and mm-hmm. that's often very stressful. Then you go into the summer where we have longer periods of time apart mm-hmm. With our children and apart from our children. That makes it hard. So the bigger goal here is to, as things happen, so if every year in the fall you start getting 20 emails from your ex about mm-hmm. all the things
yeah.
that you need to do, or the children need, uh-huh. or that have to be determined, or whatever, then if that's the pattern, then that's what's going to happen in the fall.
Then don't be surprised.
And stop being surprised when it happens. Yeah. If you go to open house for your child, if your ex has a pattern of being rude to you in public, mm-hmm. not all exes do this, but some do, and some of it's their own discomfort, their own whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, then you need to think ahead of time. Well, so if I go and this ex is going to be rude to me at my child's school, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. So what can you do? Well, you're only responsible for yourself. So you can,
right.
you can plaster a smile on your face, yeah. fake it till you make it. You can say to them, it's so nice to see you. If they're rude to you, then uh-huh. whatever. And you just need to get through the moment for your kids.
Yeah.
And ideally, you don't let the ex keep you from doing that. I know sometimes you get people that like want to go to their kids' soccer games. Mm-hmm. And the ex like is so hateful to them at the soccer game. Like they don't go anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't go. And I'm like, you need to go. But you need to anticipate the rudeness. You need to sit someplace else. Mm-hmm. But don't avoid it just because it's difficult.
Right. So, yeah. That's important because it's important for the kids to see you there. Another thing that I hear from parents is, I didn't know about this and they didn't share it with me, putting the blame kind of back on the other parent, you know, and I would like to say, you know, if the schools post calendars and they post this information, you know, that you can plan ahead and prepare for those, you know, special dates and times at the schools that they have for the kids and, you know, and have that awareness for yourself to be involved.
Right. So that's another part of stopping being surprised, right? Is like, okay, so if my ex doesn't share things with me about the kids, now you should always still ask. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So just as a general rule of thumb, it is always okay to say, hey, I know that, Jeannie is going to be playing soccer in school this mm-hmm. year or soccer outside of school this year. Can you please send me the times and the dates and who the coach is and the number so I can attend some of the soccer games. So mm-hmm. you should always make the request in a very nice way, not demanding way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need to tell me just, you know, and then and stop being surprised. Okay, they're not yeah. going to send it to you. So then what do I need to do? And what you're talking about is being proactive.
Proactive, so yeah.
You need to You need to, if she doesn't answer, then, or he doesn't answer, then you need to talk about it, you know, with your child maybe a bit. Hey, I know you're playing soccer, where are you having practices? Like, you can do it in a way that's not grilling. You could also, you probably also have some, you may have some other parent friends who have kids playing soccer. You might be able to get some information from them. If it's related to school stuff, all schools have a portal. And for some parents, if you're a parent that usually gets left off of the, they can leave with this parent list or the emergency list or the nurse's sick list, then you're going to have to be more proactive. Take your decree, go up to the school, have a very nice, lovely, low-key meeting with the principal or a teacher and just say, I just want you to know I have joint custody and I really want to be involved in my child's life and I want to be able to support the other co-parent and you. And make sure you're on the, make sure you're on the carpool list. Make sure you're on the emergency list. Make sure you're on the sick list. Like, do these things that you need to do and don't be mad about them because it's not helpful to you.
No.
Just stop being surprised and be more proactive.
So the next step in this is create a plan.
Creating a plan. Well, so we have creating a plan and then we have learning tools and skills.
Okay.
And so the tools and the skills, we've talked about the high conflict cycle with Bill Eddy. We've talked about the high conflict traits. There are two other high conflict traits I'm going to mention real fast. And then I'm going to talk about the tools and skills.
Okay.
Really fast too. So with the high conflict people, aside from all or nothing thinking, unmanaged emotions, extreme behaviors, and blaming others for everything, there are two other things that high conflict people specifically do. So one is they have targets of blame. So it's not enough for them to blame others for everything. They have specific people that they kind of go after and that become a target of blame. And so I do see this in the co-parent world. A co-parent is a very easy person to be a target of blame. It's just everything is your fault and nothing
is my fault.
And so the target of blame. Now they may have other targets of blame besides you. And sometimes it can be the therapist. Sometimes it can be an attorney. Sometimes it can be another parent, but you are a target of blame. The other thing they do is they create what we call negative advocates. They triangulate other people into your relationship or into your problems. So you're trying to get information from them about a child's school project. And you say to them, can you, you know, send me the information on that so I can make sure they get it done over the weekend. And instead they go to the teacher and say, oh, that parent is so not helpful. And that parent is doing all these things. This is the other parent saying this about you. So they start telling people how you're not helpful or how you're not involved or how you don't know what's going on. Or, and the same, this often happens with pediatricians and it often happens with therapists that one person will try to bring in that, that parent, that, that professional and align with them against the parent. These are just, it's just complicated, right? Cause it's not enough. They don't like you. They want everybody else not to like you.
Not like you too. Yeah.
What do you do about this? So Bill Eddy talks about these four skills that you want to learn. So flexible thinking, people are not all good or all bad. Everybody's got some good things and some not so good things or some things we'd like to change. This is how human beings are. And families are this way too. All families have some good things and some not so good things. And that's why if you're a parent with a one child and it's just the two of you and your family, and then the other partner has remarried and there are three kids and a new baby on the way, there are still benefits to the child of being in both families.
Yeah.
So what happens is kids go to this family that's busy and noisy and whatever, and they love it. But man, by the time they go back to mom or dad and they're the only kid, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And then they get to go back and forth. So they can get the best of both worlds. So parents don't need to be one down because of their situation. So flexible thinking, managed emotions, the idea that I can learn to regulate, I can take a walk, I can do some things in order to manage myself. Moderate behaviors. So if one parent is permissive and one parent is structured and they're both entrenched, there's no middle ground. We've got to move toward the middle. So how can I, as a parent, move toward the middle on things? make mm-hmm. multiple suggestions. We can do this or we can do this. Mm-hmm. Use that flexible thinking and those moderate behaviors. And the last one is checking in with yourself. So mm-hmm. people that are not high conflict are able to say, okay, what happened here? What did I do? What do I need to do differently? Sometimes mm-hmm. it takes people longer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah,
sure. We want it to take them, but they get there. Mm-hmm. They get there. So yeah. we want to use these tools and skills, and we want to think in terms of this is how I want to be, and these mm-hmm. are the traits I want to model mm-hmm. for my kids. Mm-hmm. Because what we know about these four traits of mm-hmm. flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behaviors, and checking yourself, all courtesy of Bill Eddy and the High Conflict Institute, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. is that they work. They build resilience for children and parents, and they yes, reduce yes. conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're teaching them how to treat others in that.
Well, exactly, because as you start utilizing these behaviors, what you realize is when it comes to being in relationship with other people, you got to use those skills there too.
Yes, right? Yeah, yeah.
The world is full of relationships and families that are splintered mm-hmm. because of all or nothing thinking.
Yes, yeah.
Extreme behaviors. Well, if you don't agree with my political candidate, you cannot come to the next Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Now, if the person's pitching a fit every Thanksgiving, that's a problem. But I can think of a couple of different ways you could address that. One is you have one family member that kind of does that. Another one would be just everybody agrees we're not going to talk about it. Like there's yeah. some things to at least try first.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, those are so helpful. I also wanted to ask you more about just a quick way to be productive in these relationships. Like, what's helpful to listeners to know about communicating with their other spouse? What are some tips there?
So I just want to go back over. So we want to stop being surprised. That's the mm-hmm, first thing. Mm-hmm. We want to learn some tools and skills, and then we want to create a plan. And mm-hmm. when we create a plan, that means that we think about what's going to happen and how we want to handle it. Mm-hmm. And we start using the tools and skills as a way to help us navigate, to help us get unhooked, to help us regulate, and to help us be a better model for our children of how we manage mm-hmm. difficulties and challenges in life, because we all have them. And when you talk specifically about communication, Bill Eddy has an amazing tool called BIF. And BIF stands for brief, informative, friendly, and firm.
Love that, yeah.
And there are actually whole books written about BIF. In fact, there is one for co-parents mm-hmm. that creates BIF responses and remarks related to everything from phone use to access to parenting time to extracurriculars. And so BIF is a very simple technique. And if you want to look at the highlights, the first thing is when you send an email or a text to your co-parent, it generally should be no longer than 2 to 7 sentences.
Oh, wow.
And the reason why it's that way is because when someone is in a high conflict way, because remember, we can all be high conflict mm-hmm, sometimes, mm-hmm. or when you have an ex that is a high conflict person, the more you say, the more you give them the opportunity to get upset about or to mm-hmm. misinterpret.
I would agree. Yeah.
So the goal is to be brief in order to lessen the opportunity. Now, if you're brief, what you cannot do is you cannot talk about 4 subjects in the same email. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So keep it simple and keep it brief. The mm-hmm. next one is informative. So informative simply means give information. It's not telling you to tell the other person what to do. In fact, there are some things you're not supposed to do in this email. You're not supposed to give advice. You're not supposed to admonish or give admonishments. You're a good person. You're a bad person. What's the matter with you? Mm-hmm. And you're not supposed to actually give apologies. Mm-hmm. And this is because the way in which our world works is that oftentimes an apology ends up creating more problems. People say, of course you're sorry. You shouldn't be sorry. You knew you were doing that. So with people that are high conflict or in co-parenting situations where there could be a lot of misinterpretation, it's actually really helpful to rather than say, I'm sorry about this, to say, I hated that that happened. or I did not, that was not my intention.
Yeah.
So there are ways to say things and to have ownership of it. So we're not saying don't have ownership, but we're just saying, if you are a person who has a habit of regularly saying, I'm sorry, and it gets used against you, stop doing that.
Yeah.
So instead, say, I hated that this happened, or that wasn't my intention, or I didn't realize that that was the issue. But saying I'm sorry can also create all sorts of other issues. So no advice, no admonishments, no apologies. So then you're going to give, but you're going to give information. You're going to say, I'm planning on picking up our daughter at this time on this day. Or due to the summer schedule, I'm wanting to know if I can switch weekends. I could do it this, or I could do it here. Or it can be, I went to the doctor today and Katie has the flu and the doctor has prescribed these medications and I'm going to give them to her. And then how can I get them to you? Or I will go up to the school and leave them with the nurse and you can pick them up from there, or you can pick them up, off my porch right after school. The point is you're just giving information. But information is not advice. It's not admonishment. And it's not even, it's just information. So keep it factual, right?
Factual. Yeah.
Another one is friendly. So the friendly piece, I think, is the hardest. you're emailing back and forth at Our Family Wizard. It does not denote friendly, but a well-placed friendly comment at the beginning or the end of an email that is information-based looks good and can feel good to both you and the other person. It will not feel normal initially. You will probably even not want to do it if you've had lots of problems. But it does look good, right? And it looks like you are making effort, and you are. So it can be things like, I hope you're having a good week, or enjoy your time with the kids, or the kids said you were traveling for work. I hope you have safe travels. Now, if that's really hard for you, come up with something a little shorter, but ideally you begin to inject at least one friendly comment at the beginning or the end, because otherwise, one of the big complaints with co-parents is my co-parent is disrespectful to me, or they're rude to me, or they just are always demanding. So you're giving information and using a well-placed, I just wanted to let you know what was going on, and I hope you, and then you give them the information, and then you say, I hope you have a good week, or I hope that, I'll look forward to seeing you at the soccer game. That could be a friendly thing, even if you're not necessarily looking forward to it.
Just be nice.
Go team. Well, once again, but you don't have to recreate things. You just need to come up with a sentence or two. So don't kill yourself trying to create these beautiful emails. Come up with a sentence or two that works and just use it every time. Right? Every time you can say, I hope you have a good day, or I hope you have a good weekend. Just use it every time. It's just friendly. And the last one is firm. And I'll tell you what firm is not. Firm is not, we're going to do it this way. Is not, you don't have a choice. It's in the decree. Those are not firm statements. Simply means that you're giving the information, and that if your co-parent starts berating you or harassing you or giving you a hard time or questioning you, you don't want to lose your cool. And you also just want to try to stick to the subject. That is firm. I'm just going to, because it's very normal that a co-parent will send one email about a topic, and the other person will turn around and say, well, what about this and this and this and this? That's like, listen, I'm just going to respond to this issue. I'm happy to respond to those other things. We can do it in another email.
That's perfect.
You just need to stay with where you're going and get an answer, because a lot of times you see co-parents emailing back and forth lots of subjects, lots of different things. Not helpful.
That's too much.
Don't be one of those co-parents that sends 10 emails in a row on a day for 10 different subjects. Let's use some discretion. Let's pick the things we need to figure out now. Let's spread it out over a period of time. But the goal is to use BIF, and it's very hard on the front end.
Yeah, it's very difficult
as you're beginning to use it, because you're like, how am I possibly going to say this in 2 to 7 sentences? But remember, we talked about all these things are yoga. They're like yoga. They're a practice or a skill that you learn. Yeah. BIF is a skill. So this is part of your plan, right? So then your plan becomes, I'm going to stop being surprised. I'm going to start understanding or getting myself unhooked. I'm going to try to use some ear statements. I'm going to start using BIF. And I'm going to start looking at the patterns. So part of the plan is looking at the patterns. When does my ex start getting upset with me? What are the topics that create problems? Does my ex always send me emails at 10 o'clock at night? Like, people are very predictable. And once you understand the patterns, then you can begin to develop a plan for those patterns. And probably an easy example is that every year during your time with your children in the summer, your ex always contacts you and wants to pick them up 4 days early. Just pick anything, right?
Right.
So that's what happens every year, or it has for the last 2 summers, or even it just did last summer. Work out a plan. Well, this year I'm going to tell my ex on the front end, I'm going to send her a note or him a note, and I'm going to say, listen, I'm looking forward to the summer, and I know you are too. That's your friendly statement. And I just wanted to, you know, confirm with you that I'm going to want to have, you know, the children for my entire parenting time that I've chosen due to some plans that we have. I hope you understand, and I'll appreciate your help on appreciate your help with this.
Yeah.
You're not lecturing, but you're just doing it on the front end. And then when you get to that point, if that ex calls you up, and don't be surprised when they do, you say, well, remember, I had already sent you this email, and we're not going to be changing. Well, I've talked to the kids and they said it was okay. Well, I appreciate that. But we've got some things we're doing, and I hope you'll understand. Like,
that makes perfect sense to me.
A lot less drama.
Yeah. A lot less drama. And, you know, all of these tips are so helpful, and these strategies. And I mean, in the end, you know, it helps everybody to live their best life as co-parents, as step families, as blended families. And, you know, especially the trickle down effect that it can have on the kids too, long term, because it does affect the kids long term. I've seen it in action in my own family. So I'm sure that you have in yours too. And, you know, we want to have the best outcome and the best results that we can. So thank you so much, Jaina, for sharing all that. And my last question that I'd love to ask you is, what would you say your fix is today in your own life?
Well, I think for me, the two things that really help are, one, just to be able to affect change. To be able to help people understand that it's never too late to start doing something different. It's never too late to learn new skills. And that at any point in time, you can always change how you do it. Nobody should be judged on their worst days or even their bad days. And all parents have things to offer and provide to their children. And our goal as parents is not to be the best parent in the world. Our goal is to be the best parent that we can be. And part of that is learning new things, trying new things, and being open to all these different processes here.
Well, thank you so much, Jaina, and listeners for tuning in today on Fixing the Fix. And you have a great rest of your day.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on Fixing the Fix podcast. Be sure to visit our website, fixingthefix.com, where you can follow the podcast on Apple or your favorite podcast platform, so you'll never miss a show. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And remember to take care of yourself and don't lose hope. We are here to help you fix your fix.